And welcome to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disability and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Gold, and I'm an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disability community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I am a Black man with a white tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck. I'm wearing a red t-shirt today. Next to me is the voice you hear speaking for me. This is a video of a Zoom call with me and the person talking for me in one box off camera, and my guest is in the other box next to it. Today, I'd like to thank Yuri Velez for being my voice in this episode. In this episode, we're talking about the intersections of disability and being a content creator.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As a board member, I helped put together a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We had so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage. Getting to do this event was a dream come true. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically. Make sure you come out later this year. More information will be available soon. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
So now let's get to today's amazing guest. Stina is a disabled content creator, author, and artist who focuses on raising awareness, educating, and maintaining a safe space for fellow disabled pals to connect and relate. They have a TikTok following over 33,000 and an Instagram following over 17,000. Thank you so much for being here today, Stina. Would you mind giving a brief visual description of yourself, please?
Of course. I'm a non-binary femme-presenting white person. I have long brown hair parted on one side with a fading gray streak in the front. I'm wearing large black frame glasses and a fading gray hoodie with the shoulders cut out. And there are twinkling lights and fake vines behind me.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that. So this seems like a silly question to ask after your intro, but we're going to stick to the script. Do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness? And if so, do you mind sharing what disabilities or chronic illnesses you have?
Yeah, I absolutely identify as a disabled person. And my list of disabilities is kind of long. Chronic illnesses tend to snowball once you have one. Mm-hmm. I consider Ehlers-Danlos syndrome sort of my core condition. It's genetic. I've had it my whole life, despite being diagnosed with it later in life. And from there, I've developed dysautonomia, gastroparesis, mast cell activation syndrome, craniocervical instability, myalgic encephalomyelitis, migraines, interstitial cystitis, recurring thyroiditis, and then that's the physical aspect. And from the mental aspect, I deal with depression, anxiety, PTSD, a dissociative disorder called depersonalization derealization disorder, OCD, ADHD, and agoraphobia. And I'm pretty sure that's all of them.
Thank you. Can you tell us how your disabilities affect you in your everyday life?
Yeah, this is honestly probably, it was one of the most difficult things to accept after I had like my first big sick moment. And it's also been the most difficult thing to get people who haven't dealt with any of this kind of thing to understand, which is that my disabilities affect and inform literally every aspect of my daily life and life in general. You know, they determine what I can do, where I can go, how I can get there. You know, they determine what I can eat and how long I can stay out of my house, if I can leave my house. They determine what type of deodorant I can use, if I can shower that day. You know, it affects literally everything. And yeah, it just everything. It's made it, it makes it, and since my disabilities are dynamic, meaning they fluctuate on a daily basis, you know, the severity fluctuates, it makes it really difficult to make plans and commit to things.
Thank you. And you mentioned that you were diagnosed with one of your conditions at birth. How old were you when you got diagnosed with others? And do you feel like there are other things going on that you that are not diagnosed?
So I actually wasn't diagnosed with at birth. The Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, it's genetic, it's a lifelong condition, but I wasn't diagnosed until I was 28. And that's actually really common for people with EDS. They go undiagnosed for a long time, usually except for in like really severe cases. In hindsight, I definitely had very obvious symptoms, but EDS has been considered a rare condition, so doctors don't tend to look for it. We are seeing that it's a lot more common than was thought, and I think that's kind of the case for a lot of disabilities. They've been called rare, but they're just underdiagnosed. I received my first diagnosis. Well, I was diagnosed with anxiety and migraines at like 12 years old, I think. But I received my first like physical diagnosis when I was 20, and it was fibromyalgia, which was a misdiagnosis, and it actually made it basically impossible to get any other diagnoses. A lot of doctors, especially at that time, had a really big bias against fibro diagnosis, and so they would just blame every symptom and every pain on the fibro and just say, well, there's nothing we can do, you just gotta live with it. And then in 2016, I was in a car accident that wasn't particularly bad, but we believe it damaged my vagus nerve, which sent everything else that I was already predisposed to because of the EDS into a spiral. I developed POTS like immediately. I was diagnosed with it in the ER after the accident, which is unheard of basically for POTS. I was quickly diagnosed with myalgic encephalomyelitis after that, and then because of what we believe was a vagus nerve incident, it triggered the mast cell and the gastroparesis at the same time as the POTS, and I was able to get those diagnoses and the EDS diagnosis within the next couple years because I had this inciting incident instead of just you're ill, deal with it. There was like something to blame the illness on, so doctors started taking me more seriously. I was able to see better doctors, and I got most of the rest of my diagnoses within those couple years, between 26 and 28 years old. I feel like I spent most of my 20s searching for answers. You know, I had my first big sick event when I was 19, and then that's at 20 was when I was diagnosed with fibro, and then my second big sick event, I consider that car accident. And so all that time I was searching for answers because I knew fibro didn't feel right. I knew something else was wrong. And so I just kept searching, and now I just sort of feel like for the first time since then that we have a hold on like everything that's wrong with me. And well, not wrong, but you know, we have like answers. We have answers for all of the questions, basically. And they're not all officially diagnosed. I don't have an official ADHD diagnosis. My doctor agrees with me that I probably have it. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not a good candidate for ADHD medicine, so it doesn't really serve me to pursue a diagnosis. It's all lifestyle management at this point. So, yeah, for the first time, I don't feel like I'm searching for more answers about my health. And also, I feel very lucky to be in that position. I don't think I ever expected to have all the answers.
You mentioned POTS and some other things that are acronyms. Can you tell our listeners what those stand for if they don't know?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. So POTS stands for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. MCAS stands for mast cell activation syndrome. What other one did I use? I'm sorry.
EDS, I think.
EDS stands for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and I had the hypermobility type. I think there's 13 subtypes of EDS.
Thank you. Have you had to go through your own I'm sure you have, as we all have, but how, can you describe how you've been going through your own internal ableism, internalized ableism, and what that journey has been like towards inner acceptance?
Yeah, oh man, it's been a journey, huh? Like I feel like obviously we all have very different paths with internalized ableism, and unfortunately I think some people never address it or recognize it within themselves. I was insufferable after I got my fibromyalgia diagnosis. I was very much one of those people who was convinced that the right diet, the right lifestyle, the right mindset would cure me. And I could go back to being a non-disabled person, which I never actually was in the first place. And even worse, I didn't just internalize that. I projected that laterally onto other disabled people, and I still cringe thinking about how I used to be with that. The catalyst for changing that was I started a Tumblr. I'm not sure why I started it in the first place, but it originated as like, toxic positivity, and you can do whatever the motto was, disabled's a bad word, you can do whatever you set your mind to, which is untrue. And through Tumblr, I was exposed to, well, other disabled people who are of that same ilk, who internalize that ableism and just ride that, and it causes a lot of harm, not just in them, but in other disabled people. But I was also exposed to the disabled community that is about like radical self-acceptance and, not apologizing for taking up space and just existing. And I remember seeing those posts and for a long time thinking, wow, that must be great. I really wish I could be like that. And then at some point it just clicked, like, I can. I can be like that. I don't have to be this person who's perpetuating this nonsense. And that really like started that journey. And then finding creators on YouTube like Chronically Jackie and Christina Doherty, and people who were just sharing their experience openly with disability and not being ashamed and not feeling guilty and not apologizing. And yeah, that's what really got me into the accepting it and trying to unlearn all of the ableism that we're really taught since birth. Because this is a very ableist society, and it is just ingrained in us, from the moment we're yeeted out into this world. We're taught that being disabled is somehow bad.
And you gotta love those fake cures.
I'm sorry?
You gotta love those fake cures.
Yeah. As far as where I'm at in the internalized ableism journey now, yeah, I'm still unlearning it. I think it's important that we share the whole experience of it, because for a while there, I was very like, self-acceptance, that's the only way. And I love myself and every part of me, and everything is fine because of that. And no, absolutely not. I was getting messages from people in the community who were like, oh, I hope I can be as content with my health and stuff as you are someday. And I realized, like, oh no, I'm projecting a lie. I went from toxic positivity to, I don't even know what this is, but it's still bad. So now it's like, I still get angry at my body for not allowing me to do things. I still call myself lazy when in reality I'm in too much pain that day to do something. Like, it's really important that we're honest about still struggling with these things, because everyone else is too. And they need to know that they're not alone in that. And yeah, it's important to give people realistic expectations about unlearning ableism, and that I think it's probably a lifelong journey. I think it gets easier to recognize when a thought is rooted in ableism. I don't know if it gets easier to stop having those thoughts entirely, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I follow those folks that you mentioned yet, so we'll be
Well,
sure to share. Yeah.
unfortunately, chronically, Jackie passed away a few years ago.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've sort of spoken to this already, but just to get into a little more detail, what do you think you've learned that stays with you on a daily basis from the disability community or a specific disabled person?
Oh man, like so much. It's so hard to even just pin down one thing because it feels like I'm such a completely different person now than I was even just 5 years ago, and it's all due to people in the community. You know, like I've learned so much from people, and I've completely changed like how I perceive the world and perceive myself. And obviously for the better, you know, like I'm not cruel to myself anymore about being disabled, but I think that's probably the one most important thing is to just be kind to yourself and give yourself grace and compassion. And 'cause I did not used to do that. I was constantly ridiculing myself and I still do, but now I'm like, no, that's a bad thought. That's not a good thought. Let's reframe that. And yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the thing I'm most grateful for from the community and other disabled creators is just, you know, beating it into my head that you need to be nice to yourself because, you know, we're not in control of most of this.
Yeah, me too. It's hard to give yourself the grace that you deserve.
It really is. Like, I mean, we're just, especially in, you know, the society is largely based on it teaches us to base on our worth, on how much labor we can contribute and how much wealth we can build for other people. And that's just inherently untrue, like from a human standpoint, you know, we have so much worth beyond that.
Yeah, thank you. It's unhealthy as well.
Oh, it's so unhealthy. I mean, it just keeps wearing you down more and more, you know, it perpetuates that cycle of, you know, being cruel to yourself so you feel worse and then you feel worse so you're more cruel to yourself and it just wears you down so fast.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your involvement in the disability community. Why was advocating right for you?
I think, I mean, I really started advocacy as a way to cope with my own circumstances. Like, I wish I could say it was selfless and I just wanted to make the world better, but like, I needed something to focus on to help me cope with accepting that my life had changed and a lot of the things that I had planned on for my life, which in hindsight were not that realistic even for a non-disabled person. You know, they just weren't going to happen, and I had to focus on something to make me feel more comfortable with that and in my body. And so, I mean, that was a big part of it, but that eventually evolved into when I started getting interactions with other people in the community who were like, it helped them in some way, what I was sharing, my motivation evolved to from I'm doing this to make myself feel better to I can help other people feel better, even if it's just a little bit, even if it's just one person. Like that's so worth it because people did that for me and I remember how that felt and I still do it. And like to be able to provide that is incredible, you know? But then also the other aspect of it that I've really had to analyze is that I am very desensitized to like harassment and negative comments and trolls and all that stuff, you know? And like, you know, we get that all the time. No matter what the disability content is, there's always gonna be someone who's like, And you really have to have like a thick skin to be able to deal with that all the time. And a lot of people aren't in a mind space where they can deal with that. Like a lot of people I know want to do this and they're not in the space to be able to handle that aspect of it. And I don't blame, no one should have to. But it also kind of makes me feel like I have a responsibility because I'm in this position to be able to do this without risking my mental health or anything. You know, if you're able to use the platform, I feel like I have a responsibility to do it.
Can you tell us what some of those plans might have been that?
I was very convinced that I was going to be an actress. I lived in LA for a little while when I was 15, and my mom and I just sort of moved out there without having any understanding of how difficult it is to break into that industry and also how expensive it is to live in LA. So I took some acting classes, but mostly we just cleaned houses all day to survive. And when I eventually moved back to Ohio, I still had it in my mind that eventually I would somehow make this happen. I would somehow do it. And when it got to the point where I couldn't even stand up for like the person that I was dating at the time when my health really started to go downhill was in a band, and I couldn't even stand up for the full length of one of their band's shows, I had a breakdown and I was like, if I can't stand up for this, like the film industry is just inherently ableist in general, and it's difficult to get into for anyone, but it's also physically difficult for even non-disabled people. And at some point I just had to be like, that's not going to be a healthy path for me to pursue, even if I were to somehow manage to achieve it, I would be damaging my health more in the long run.
I swear I had the same goal, and I said, fuck it, all right,
Oh
instead.
no. Same. Same. Oh, you still get to like live in the world of fantasy, you know, but like from your own chair. From you don't have to like hurt yourself to do it.
It makes me admire people like Ryan O'Connell and Marley Matlin so much more.
Yes, absolutely. Like just knowing what they have to deal with, you know? Like that's a whole other tier of human, and I am not in that tier, and that is okay.
All right. What areas in the disabled community are you potentially the most passionate about?
I used to think that it was raising awareness and, you know, educating people outside the community. I used to think that that was like my number one priority, and it's not. Like it's up there. It is a priority and it's necessary, but my top priority is making sure that the space that I've created for people in the community is safe, you know, for them to just exist and feel comfortable and not have to worry about non-disabled people judging them or harassing them. You know, that's oops, sorry. Digby, come here. That's also Digby's priority. But yeah, just cultivating this safe space within the community. And sorry, I lost my train
Okay.
of thought. Yeah, it's safe space. Safe space is first and foremost. Second to that, educating on accessibility and how inaccessible the world is, and you know, hopefully trying to get people to understand to think about inclusivity up front instead of as an afterthought.
Can you talk about what safe spaces you do create for the community and what that actually looks like for you?
Yeah, so I mean the most obvious ones are like in in the chat, in the comments of TikTok and on Instagram and stuff, I monitor very heavily and I moderate very heavily. And I used to leave up all of the nasty comments as like a display of, hey, everybody else, this is what we have to deal with. But this space isn't for everybody else. This space is for us and the community. And we all know that those people exist. We all know that those comments are happening. We don't need to be constantly pelted with them. So a lot of times creating that safe space looks like blocking people and deleting comments and hiding comments. And occasionally it looks like putting the spotlight on a specific comment and letting people air their grievances with them, you know? Like that's healing sometimes. But then also, like, I do a movie night every week for people in the community. We call it Stuck Inside Movie Night, and it originated as like, you know, when everyone was isolated in the pandemic, and a lot of us still are, to just sort of have this space online to get together, feel safe with other people, even though you're not there in person, and just exist as you are and not have to filter what you're saying or how you're relating to other people or, you know, filtering your experiences. Because I feel like a lot of us do that in everyday life, like out in the world when we're not in our own community. Because, you know, a lot of non-disabled people get real weird when you just like exist as you are. And as much as the ultimate goal is to not have to filter ourselves to make other people comfortable, I know a lot of us still do it just so we don't have to deal with the reaction from them all the time, you know? Yeah, so I mean, that's the main thing with these spaces is just like allowing people in the community to exist as they are.
Are these spaces only for disabled and chronically ill adults, or can the youth join them too?
Oh no, it's for everyone. I don't put an age restriction on anything. I mean, I don't do like thirst traps or anything on my platforms. Like, I don't think I really talk about anything that's inherently inappropriate for children. I swear a lot, but I think if parents don't want their kids to hear that, then that's kind of on them to monitor what content they're consuming. But yeah, as long as they're, I do say like for the safety of minors, please don't discuss your age like in the chats of these platforms just because you don't know who's, you know, who's seeing it. But yeah, no, they're absolutely, everyone's welcome, you know, as long as you act right, as long as you don't be mean to people. Well, you can be mean to the ableists, but like not each other.
That's what our private accounts are for.
Yep.
Thirst traps.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, in terms of how you advocate, are you social media primarily only? Do you speak publicly, write articles, etc.?
Yeah, for now I'm only on social media. I was looking at like getting into public speaking and stuff before the pandemic happened, and unfortunately my agoraphobia has just become like unmanaged. Like it's taken over my, like I pretty much can't leave my house. So public speaking isn't really an option for me at this point and probably not in the near future. I do hope that eventually it'll be an option again. But for now, I just do what I can with social media. But I also try to, I haven't in the past because, you know, I wasn't educated when I wrote my first books. And in hindsight, there's probably some stuff in there that is not great for our, you know, for the message. And I would like to rewrite those. But the books that I write now and moving forward, I try to include elements of advocacy and, you know, activism and stuff in those, even though they're fiction, because I think it's important to sort of normalize advocacy and all of this in the streams of information that people are most readily consuming, which is entertainment. And so if you see disabled people just existing, and if you see the realities of living as a disabled person in things like books and TV shows and movies, I think people are going to be a lot more open to accepting that and moving forward with that. Whereas when you're just speaking on the topic, which is also important, you know, just advocacy for the sake of advocacy is also important, but a lot of people are very hesitant to accept that and listen, really listen.
How about public speaking virtually?
Oh yeah, I would love to do that. I honestly don't know how to get into that at all.
Right on.
I've been, you know, the last couple years have been, I've just been trying to like survive within my own my mental health hasn't been great, so I haven't really been looking into this stuff, but I do feel like I'm getting a little bit better, a little bit more managed, so I would like to look into that at some point. I imagine that's probably more of an option now than it was a few years ago, too.
I like that you say this because for me, everyone wants me to write about disability, and it's my only form to escape from the topic of disability.
Yeah, that's definitely understandable. And I think it's important to write what, you know, what you feel like you need to write. You're writing for yourself first and foremost, right? And so what other people want you to write,
All right. Well, now I'm putting you down for virtual, future virtual panels, Dina.
Oh boy. Okay. Oh, I guess so anxious about stuff, but I would love that. Thank you.
Right. I have to admit that I'm envious of you in a good way. In terms of how many more followers you have than me, yet you deserve it. 17,000
Oh.
plus on Instagram and 33,000 plus on TikTok at the time of this recording. Do you have a preference of one over the other? Is one easier to grow than the other?
Ooh, TikTok is definitely easier to grow. It's just something about the algorithm and the reach. Like, you know, I don't think I ever had a post on Instagram go viral. Like, but TikTok is like, I don't know. TikTok is a whole different world from any other platform as far as reach goes. I did not expect to gain a following on TikTok because I genuinely do not believe I'm like an interesting person to watch or anything like that. You know, on Instagram, all my posts are like, well, basically, my posts on Instagram are screenshots of text posts from Twitter. But TikTok, oh, I was lost when I joined, and somehow it just worked out. Yeah, TikTok's definitely easier to grow. I do honestly prefer posting on Instagram just because, you know, I still get anxious on camera. I still get anxious, you know, I'm self-conscious about my voice because I have vocal cord dysfunction and like I hear it and other people don't hear it, but I hear it. And it's, you know, and it takes so much energy to even just do a 60-second video. So much energy. Why? Why? But yeah, TikTok's easier to grow. Instagram, honestly, a lot of my followers on Instagram, I started out posting like writing content on Instagram completely unrelated to disability. And I will not lie, I boosted a lot of those posts. And like I paid to have the posts boosted. I was so obsessed with growing my following at the time. Like I don't care about numbers anymore, but I was obsessed with them then. So I boosted my posts. I got them in front of people. That got me up to like, I don't know, 7,000 followers. And then everything's been organic since then. But the problem is, it's like, you know, once you have more followers, you're more likely to have your content shown to other people, whereas they don't give that opportunity as much to creators with smaller followings. So it's kind of like that, and it's the same thing on TikTok as well. Like you still have a chance of going viral with fewer followers, but if you have more followers, if you have more interaction, the algorithm is more likely to push your content.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that same thing where like rich people get free stuff and they don't need it. But yeah, I feel like they could do it a little bit better, give people a fairer chance of having their content seen.
Yeah, I'm scared to pay, but I'm obsessed with numbers. It's sad.
No, it's not sad. I mean, that's the society we're living in, right? It's not sad. It really isn't.
Do you have any tips for online advocacy?
I don't know. I feel like I'm not in a good position to give tips because I honestly feel like so much of my I'm not going to say success because it's still like, I'm still a small creator, but like it's all just luck, right? Like I lucked into the right thing, was in front of the right person at the right time, and they shared that, and then that went bigger. And it's all very, very luck based. But and I feel like the people who are continuously saying, make content consistently and make three posts a day and pick a niche and do all of these things. They're probably trying to sell you a book on like how to become a creator. Because like I've done those things and I didn't notice a difference. And so I make what I want when I can make it. And if it does well, that's good. And if it doesn't, oh well, I still wanted to make it and I did. I do think, as long as you're doing it for the right reasons, if not getting that engagement immediately shouldn't be an issue, it's always disheartening, I think, 'cause like if you're posting on social media, you want engagement, right? People don't post on social media, otherwise they would just be writing in a journal if they didn't care about engagement. But as long as you're doing it because it's something you want to do and you enjoy doing it, then just keep doing it. And eventually it'll get in front of the right people. Eventually, you'll reach that goal. It just takes time and different people, it's all circumstance. It people reach the goals at different times. There's no set timeline. But also the most important one, have a thick skin, because there's gonna be horrible comments. And if you can't handle the horrible comments, I can't stress enough how much you shouldn't do this.
Yeah, I was definitely lucky with Vicky Vox, who's a celebrity drag queen, following me. Now we're friends, which is awesome.
Oh, nice. That's so cool.
What tips do you have for making your content accessible for everybody, especially for non-disabled creators?
Like tips for how they can make it accessible?
I think how you, oh, yes.
Or
Yeah, okay, so let me rephrase that question. So what tips do you have for making your content for making content accessible for everybody, especially for non-disabled creators to make their content accessible for everybody?
okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure because it's like they don't need more accessibility. The world is literally made for them. the main issue there, right, is that accessibility isn't universal, right? So whose access needs are we considering? Because people have competing access needs. And the example that I usually use for that is captioning, right? Like there are people who need captions to be able to consume content, and there are people who need the absence of captions to be able to consume the content. So what do you do in that scenario? And a lot of the platforms have made that aspect a little bit easier with auto captions where the viewer can turn them on and off. And so it's, but there are still permanent overlay captions. So like it's one of those things where all you can do is your best to try to meet every mark, but also you're never going to be able to do it. You're never going to be able to make something accessible for everyone. So you just got to try your best. My big ones are captions, avoiding flashing lights and flickering lights, and I see that so much on TikTok, and there's never a warning, and it's, and there's, you can't report it either. Like, there's no option to report it for that because it's, you know, it's an effect on the app. Like, so avoiding those is good. Using inclusive language and trying to modify your vocabulary to eliminate, you know, harmful words, and that's really difficult. Like, there are a lot of ableist words that we don't realize are ableist until it's pointed out, and then a lot of people fight back on that too. Like, they don't want to remove those words because they're so used in our vocabulary. And I do my best to eliminate them. I don't usually call people out for using the big ones I call people out on, but like the ones that are just super normalized. If I were calling people out on that, that's all I would be doing with my day. But doing your best to use inclusive language, eliminate exclusive language. What else? Hang on. I wrote it down because I knew I would forget. Where did I put it? Oh no, I went past it. Wait. There we go. Okay. Flashing lights. Video and image descriptions whenever possible. Avoid jump scares and unexpected loud noises, which, sorry about the dog. And including content warnings for sensitive subjects is also a good one that a lot of people don't ever attempt to do, and that's the one that I'm still really working on too, just because it's not, you know, mm-hmm. we weren't raised to do that, so it's still an afterthought for me, so I'm trying really hard to think of that ahead of time.
What do you think about the systemic ableism of a platform not providing warnings for flashing lights or something like that, and the idea that it's put on the individual then to provide that kind of content warning?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reflective of the society we live in, right? I mean, it's right now our own safety and our own accommodations are largely put on us to find and to get, and we have to really rely on people just being decent people and not making the world hostile for us, and that doesn't happen a lot. Like, I mean, it's, people don't think about it, and I think too, that's one of those things where if we as a community try to, like, you know, call out TikTok and be like, hey, remove the flashing lights, or even just like put a mandatory pause and warning on those mm-hmm. videos, I feel like so many people would just be pissed about it, mm-hmm. you know. Even though, like, the pause and warning, that's one of the best things you could do. It's a good compromise, you know, they can still have their effect, and people who are affected by the flickering and stuff would be safe from it.
Exactly.
And it would not cause any harm, but people would still hate it because it's change that benefits a marginalized group.
Right. Did you see the one with the teen defending the R word?
Yes. Oh my gosh, the internet is, I mean, it's not the internet. These people exist in real life. Mm-hmm. These are real life problems, but oh, it's just so, it's hard to even find words for, because it's like, these are things where if you have the basic decency, like if you have basic decency, if you have the bare minimum empathy to treat people like human beings, then that shouldn't even be a debate. It shouldn't be an issue. Like, why is this still an issue in the year of our Lord 2022? Why are we still dealing with these things? We've seen into like another solar system, but we're still having to debate ableists on the internet.
Yeah, they were fucking pissed at a lyric change, and I'm like, that was why we were mad. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And they'll never, a lot of people just aren't going to acknowledge it. They're not going to acknowledge anything that doesn't directly affect them, you know? But, well, that's the fun thing about disability. Eventually, it will affect them. Like, statistically, they're either going to become disabled or they're going to die before it happens.
All right. Well, in your opinion, what social media platform does have the best or at least most available accessibility options?
Oh, I mean, that goes back to what are whose access needs are we considering, right? Because, like, and also, are we talking about consuming content or posting content? Because for me, Twitter is like the easiest place that I can post. It's the most accessible for me because it's just done. But for consuming content, a lot of people don't do well with block text, you know, like they can't consume that. And so I don't really know what's the best one. I feel like they have different. I feel like between Twitter and Instagram would probably be the best options. But also keep in mind, my experience with social media is very limited. Like I use Twitter and Instagram and Twitch and TikTok, and that's about it. I mean, I use Tumblr, but I don't use Tumblr anymore. And like Facebook, oh no. But yeah, I think probably between Twitter and Instagram, I think Twitch is the worst. TikTok is trying, sort of. But like they don't have an option for adding video descriptions. You have to basically add them in a thread of comments, which are notorious for posting out of order. So that's difficult. But Twitch, oh no, Twitch is awful. Like there isn't an option for auto captions. Like the creators have to find and install a widget to get subtitles on their screens. And the chats are hard to keep up with, and the search options are miserable, and there's not really repercussions for people on that platform who like do really nasty things, like say really nasty things in the chat. So I would say Twitch is the worst. And either TikTok or Twitter, in my experience, would be the best.
My next question was going to be which platform you think the worst is. So thanks for speaking to that. For
Twitch.
me, I thought Clubhouse would be the worst one. And especially, I hated it so much when it got so popular at the top of the pandemic, and able-bodied people still found a way to exclude disabled users like myself by not adding chat boxes. Super ableist, in my opinion.
I wasn't familiar with Clubhouse until you mentioned it and you sent the questions earlier, and I had to look it up. But I mean, that's horrible that that happened. Like, and it's such an easy fix, you know? It takes so little to add. Like, obviously accessibility isn't universal, but it takes so little to just make changes that make things way more accessible to a lot of people. And the people who just refuse, for why? For why?
I get the point of audio-only apps, but it is unfair.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's just no reason that a chat box can't be added, you know? There's no reason that it can't be. Like, other than people just don't want to, they just don't want to accommodate people who aren't like them.
So how can similar apps improve, in your opinion, in this way?
Listen to disabled people. Like, people in the community are constantly calling on different platforms to make these very basic changes. And I mean, there are a lot of changes, but they are basic changes that, you know, from a coding aspect are actually like really easy to integrate. And they occasionally, especially with Twitch, you get people calling for these options, and then they'll just do something completely different that nobody asked for. And it's like, you had a chance, you could have done it, and then you didn't. But like, it's really as easy as just listening to what the community's asking for and making those changes.
Okay, but I do know some coding as I have a Microsoft certification. It is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but is it difficult or is it just tedious?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It's not hard to do. They just don't want to put in the time to do it. Yeah. I will admit, though, that my experience with coding ended with MySpace.
Yeah,
Oh.
that's why I quit.
Yep.
All right, Stina, is there anything that I forgot to ask you about today that you wanted to discuss?
I don't, not that my foggy brain can think of, no.
Stina, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did. We're so appreciative of the insights that you provided. If people wanted to connect with you and support the work that you do, where can they do so?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate, that you even thought to invite me to do this. That's very, I'm grateful. Yeah, so I mostly use TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, and occasionally Twitch. I still occasionally live stream on Twitch. And I'm Stina Lane on all of those. I'm also Stina Lane on like every platform that I'm on. So if you want to see if I'm on a platform, I'm on most of them, but it's a secret, so it's a surprise.
All right, well, I'll make sure to share everything in my description below. Once again, everyone, I'm Sean Gold. Thank you for watching. Make sure you like, comment all your thoughts, and subscribe. I'll see you all next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture. Thanks, Dina.
Thank you.
Thank you.